Welcome back to another episode of Dentistry's Growing with Grace podcast. Join Grace and her guest of the week as they discuss lessons learned in the industry and explore unique insights into ethical growth. Hello and welcome back to Dentistry's Growing with Grace. I'm very excited to have my friend Brian Hinks with me today. Brian, thank you for joining me.
Grace, it's an absolute pleasure to be here. You run an amazing podcast and your guests are and listeners are well served listening to you. So thanks for letting me be a part of it.
Oh, thank you. Tell us about you and your business and give us a little bit of information so that we can trust everything you're about to share.
Yeah, no problem. I'll try to do it in a consolidated way, but I'm the guy you call when you're buying a dental practice and you want some competent help and someone in your corner. Okay, so I'm an accountant by trade. And in my company, what we do is we only help dentists. And we only help buyers, and we only help through the transition process. So I got into doing what I'm doing through financial planning and tax returns and trained accountants. And when I was the junior guy at a couple dental CPA firms, I got all the associate dentists who were buying their practices. I helped them kind of informally through, you know, this major career step, like the biggest, probably the biggest decision, certainly in their career life. It's right up there with, do I get married? Should I have kids? Where should I live? Right? Do I buy a practice? And is this the right one? Is such a big question. And I noticed that there were people kind of tangentially helping the buyer, like the broker's kind of helping the buyer, but the broker works for the seller. And the bankers are kind of working for the buyers, but the bankers just want to get paid back. They're not necessarily invested in the long-term success. And the lawyers are there and they're there to protect and they do a good job, but they're not strategically helping the buyers. And they noticed that there was no one out there doing it. So that's what I do. And I've been doing it for about 10 years. I've helped. We're closing in on, we're just a few practices short of 1,000 transitions we've helped with. And so that's my credibility. And I know a lot about the dental transitions world and got a team now, and it's a fun place to be.
Well, I love it. And you're one of the few people in the dental space that are putting out content on social media. So I enjoy seeing your content and I think it's great. And I appreciate you being here. So I'm going to jump right in to grilling you with some of these questions.
Fire
so
away.
If a practice owner is selling their business in the near future, why not just save money on marketing? Why not just like try to pull back on expenses and hold back? Cause you're going to be leaving soon anyways.
Right. Cash in. Yeah. You have built this amazing career. Why not go cheap? Why not just advertising too? Like, let's not pay the accountant. Let's do our own payroll. Let's, let's go cheap on the amalgam, and, you know, Shine will be sad and Benco will be kind of unhappy that we're going with cheapy stuff, but the patients don't care and I'm not going to see them again anyway. Right. I mean, and Grace, let's you and I be honest. That's exactly what most sellers do. Okay. So your question is, why not do this? Well, that's what everybody's doing. So the reason the reason they're doing it is, like you said, they're ready to cash in on their career. And so let's not be too judgmental, you and I, about that mentality, because if you and I were in those dentists' shoes, we might be doing the same thing. Let me give you an alternate way to think about it though. Okay. So if you're selling a dental practice, you're in your 50s, 60s, maybe 70s. There's quite a few 70-year-old dental sellers out there that I've seen. And you want to get top dollar for your dental practice. A couple things need to be true about your practice. And the very first is that your production and collections numbers can't see a big drop over time. Okay. And here's the sneaky psychological problem here, right? We're recording in 2023. I do have some average numbers, but let's just pick a nice round number. Let's say a seller in 2019, pre-COVID, 2019, they collected $1 million. Amazing, right? That's above average, by the way, for dental practices. And that seller, they got through COVID, they survived, they kind of did the things, and their collections have come back up and all of that. And now they're, you know, 850, 870, 890, something like that. Guess what that seller has in their mind as the high watermark of their dental practice? Like the most that seller ever collected was $1 million, right? so in their head, I have $1 million practice and I'm ready to sell it. Well, guess what? On paper, you don't. You have an $850,000 practice and you're going to be hard pressed to find a buyer at a lower amount. And it's psychologically, it's going to mess with you. So that's the first reason is you are going to think your practice is worth more than it actually is. And you're going to be disappointed. You're going to spin your wheels when you try to sell it because you're going to want too much for your practice and buyers aren't dumb and the broker is serving you. You might find a broker that bites, but there's a whole psychological game on the broker side too. So my first piece of advice on why not just pull back on advertising is you need the new patients, you need the income coming in, and if you want full value for your practice, you need to keep your foot down on the gas pedal. Not to mention the fact that if your collections do drop to 850, et cetera, there's some income you've lost over those last few years. So this mentality of I'm going to take my foot off the gas, it ends up hurting sellers more than it helps them, even though, like you and I are going to be honest about it, it feels very natural to do.
It does. And it happens all the time. And it's pretty common. And I get a lot of people calling me, well, the seller didn't do any marketing. The seller yeah. wasn't doing anything. And yep. the new patient numbers were really dwindling. So, and it's great for a buyer. I mean, it's great. Yeah. I mean, the buyer,
right.
I see a lot of opportunity there. If you see a practice that just kind of like dropped, you might have a lot of people you could still reactivate. You yeah. could still see some opportunity there. So, but it does lead to a disappointing situation when you just take your foot off the gas, as you said. Something else to think about here is you might just be done. You yep. might just be done. It might be time for you to sell. And you have to like look at yourself in the mirror, have a moment and say, do I have it left in me to ramp things up over the next 3 years before I sell? Or am I done? Am I just done with this? And if you're just done, finish on top. Like, this is my advice anyways, don't let it fizzle out and then go to sell in a few years. Either build it up and push down on the gas or let it go.
Yep.
That's what I would say.
I think there are situations where dentists are financially unprepared or unable to retire, but the vast majority, it's a psychological game. They're not ready mm-hmm. to retire away from. It's their identity. It's their purpose. It's lots of things, right? It's routine in your day. It's somewhere to go. It's credibility. It's lots of things. So you're right. So let me just say differently what you just said. A canary in the coal mine that you might be done is that you want to stop, like you don't want to pay Grace. her bill came and you're like, oh, do I have to do this again? Not because Grace isn't awesome and the advertising isn't totally worth it. It's just like, oh, do I need new patients? Right. And that, so the canary in the coal mine maybe is your advertising budget.
Yeah, could be. It could be. And I mean, every situation is unique. That's what I really liked about your message that on some of the stuff I've seen on your social media is that you don't take a one size fits all approach. Right. And I see too many advisors on social media going if then situations. And it's like, there are all of these extraneous factors that play into it, your health, your mindset. But like you said, it is largely a psychological game. And I even had someone who already sold his practice call me to redo his website before the transaction. It had nothing to do with the dollar amount. It was purely emotional. It was purely, I don't want this to be the last impression I make on the industry is this website. I was like, are you sure? Because your feelings are going to change in like 2 weeks. You're going to be like on vacation and you're not going to care anymore. And he was like, no, I'm sure I want to do it. And sure enough, 2 weeks
too
later,
ethical, Grace, you should have sold the premium package.
I should have sold the most expensive thing. No, I'm just kidding. All right. So my next question for you is how much are practices selling for right now? And how can, if I'm a dentist selling my practice, how can I get top dollar?
Yeah. So I'll give you the metric everybody knows, and I'll tell you the actual numbers, and I'll even give you some specialties. Okay. And then right after I'm done giving you these numbers, I'm going to tell you they're bogus, they're meaningless, and to ignore the answer I just gave you. Okay.
Perfect.
So I'm prepping you. And here's what's going to happen. Everybody's going to hear the number. They're going to forget the second thing that I said, and they're only going to remember the number. But everybody wants the number, so I'll give them the number, okay?
Give us the wrong number.
The wrong number to think, and the wrong way to think about it is as a percentage of collections, okay? So I use my million-dollar practice. Everybody has in their head this metric of what do practices sell for, As a percentage of, and let's just use last year's collections. By the way, most certified valuation experts, people that value practices for a living, we use a 3-year weighted average for collections, but that's beside the point. Let's just use the $1 million number. The average dental practice in the US today, using 2022 data, so it's a few months old, but it's pretty recent, is selling for 82.1%. Okay. 82.1% is the number, but here's the, and by the way, that's an average of all specialties nationwide. Okay. Rural, urban, GPs, specialists, that's the overall aggregate number. And by the way, that's just my data. That is not, I don't have this peer reviewed, published somewhere in a scientific journal. This is just my transactions and some data that I've cobbled together from brokers who were kind enough to share some data with me. And, people are going to get really excited because that doctor that in 2019 thought that their practice was worth, you know, it actually did collect $1 million. They're going to say 82.1. Okay. So that means I should get $821,000 for my practice. And here's the rub. Okay. Is it has nothing to do with collect, not net, literally nothing, but almost nothing to do with collections. It has almost everything to do with your profit margins. Okay.
Oh no.
I know. And that is a harder number to get to, right? And your profit margin number isn't something that every dentist knows off the top of their head. By the way, it's profit before you pay yourself, before you take tax related deductions like depreciation and amortization, interest payments, et cetera. And it's your profit margin before you take other like totally legit and legal tax deductions like your cell phone bill and putting your spouse on payroll and all of these other things.
It's before that?
Before that, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So average practice in the US has overhead somewhere between 55 and 60%, depending on specialty and location and all those things. So that $1 million practice should at least be bringing home $400,000 in profit to that dentist. And the prices are based on that $400,000 number. Okay. So, GP practices tend to sell for a little bit less than 82.1, specialty practices, with the exceptions of sometimes endo, sometimes oral surgery is tricky, but it can be more, can be less, and pedo, ortho sell for a little bit more, GP a little bit less. So those are some stats, and I've told you why it doesn't matter, because it actually all comes down to profit. And that being said, everybody's going to remember the 82.1, and that's okay. Just know that a couple things have happened in the last few years. In 1985, 1995, even 2005, that number was a relatively good indicator of the value of your practice. Here in 2023, smaller practices, I don't mean operatories, I mean collections. So if you're collecting $400,000, $500,000, $600,000, you're a little bit below the average, which is great. No problem. There's no judgment about that. Your average number is a lot less than 82.1. And if your practice is collecting $1.5 million, $2 million, $3 million, $8 million, whatever, your percentage of collections is a lot more than 82.1. So Grace, average US family has 2.1 children, right? But nobody actually literally has 2.1 children. It's the same deal. Like I'm giving you a mathematical average and it's kind of pointless. It gives you direction so you can have a sense. You could plug it in with your CPA in your 40s to get a sense of when you might be able to retire, but don't use that number as a gauge of how much your practice is actually worth. You actually have to do evaluation.
So I'm going to just go way off topic because I'm really good at that. I get very frustrated seeing a lot of false promises in marketing. And I see a lot of marketers, especially being like 30 new patients tomorrow or all of your money back. And I get the sense that in your space, it's very similar where there's a lot of just inflated in like numbers and information, anything to close the deal, anything to get the client. And then the end result is a whole profession of people with totally unrealistic expectations. And even though I'm a marketer, I blame marketing and I blame people that are kind of selling the dream. And I just want to kind of say, thank you for giving us that realistic information, that data, because why be disappointed for no good reason other than you maybe saw a few too many, speakers or influencers.
Right. You did the steak dinner at the hotel. Can I tell you how brokers market, and one of the things maybe to watch out for of the marketing of your practice, right? Let's say you meet with two brokers, you are in the market, right? Your canary in the coal mine moment came due, you decide you're going to sell all the practice. And so you call around and you find that there are in general, there are two or three local brokers that tend to do most deals in most markets. So you call them, they come to your office, and both of them sit in your office, and one says, "Hey doc, I can get you $850,000 for your practice." The next person comes in and says, "Hey doc, I can get you $750,000 for your practice." Well, this is a no-brainer decision. Who are you going to pick as your broker, right? I mean, this is not hard. But here's the deal. When you're marketing yourself as a broker, there is this game and there is this pressure to promise a high number. And the dental transitions industry, the brokers specifically, have such a negative reputation, because what happens is, because that pressure is there, a lot of dental brokers will... And I don't know if they're being dishonest or not, Grace. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's say that they're just optimistic.
Nah.
But I mean, they are. Like, they know if I can lock you in to a 12, 18, 24 month contract with me, I can promise you the 850. I can go out to the marketplace, say, "Oh my gosh, Grace, you wouldn't believe it. 3 months ago, we would have gotten you 850. I'm shocked and I'm surprised that we haven't gotten more offers, but these things have happened in the marketplace. We could have never seen them happen. I'm so sorry to tell you, we have to drop our price to 750. Right? And now we're back to the exact same price that broker number two promised you, and you've lost time. And by the way, now you're working with the unethical broker that the lawyers and the bankers and the dental buyer advocates like me don't want to deal with. And you're stuck because you're in this contract with broker A. So just something to be aware of, the marketing of the selling of dental practices.
It's exactly the same in marketing. Like, I can say, you know, in your market, your level of competition, $2,000 in ad spend is going to get you X amount of patients. And the next salesperson is just going to double, triple, pull whatever number out of the tree they can get. And then as soon as you sign on that annual or sometimes 2-year contract, which is totally unnecessary, that's it. It doesn't matter if they get your results or not. You're locked in. And so I'm so glad we're talking about this. People need to be aware of this. Like, get realistic numbers, talk to people, and then make decisions. If my dad used to always tell me as a kid, if it seems too good to be true, it probably is. Mm-hmm. And you kind of have to have that, my dad's voice in your head.
I love it. I'm going to have your dad's voice in my head now.
So how do I know if I need a broker and how should I choose a good one?
Okay. Yeah. And that is kind of the next natural question. You probably need a broker if you don't have a buyer in mind. Okay. That's probably the litmus test. And it seems like about half the sellers in the country, around that, maybe 40 to 50%, could be a little bit less than half, just don't have a buyer identified. They don't have a ready pipeline. They don't have an existing associate in the practice. They haven't been going to study clubs. They haven't been going to the dental conferences. They don't know the recent grads and the associates that are chomping at the bit to buy good practices. That's usually the dentist who needs a broker. And here's the good news is the broker is going to provide a ton of value for you. A good broker out there, they're going to charge you probably 8 to 10% of the purchase price. You can go a little bit cheaper in some markets. I wouldn't recommend it. So you're going to, you know, if you sell for $1 million, it's a $100,000 bill to that broker. You're going to choke a little bit the first time you hear that. But let me tell you, if you don't have a buyer in mind, it's worth every penny, as long as the broker's good. Okay. And that's the big asterisk on that, you know, my comment about the bill. If you just need a valuation, you can pay for just that. If you just need someone to walk you through the process, you've got an associate, maybe it's a son or daughter that's buying the practice, or you're transitioning to someone you already know, you can get away with just a lawyer and just a valuation person. Maybe me, it comes in and helps the buyer, something like that. You can do it for a lot cheaper. So, not everybody needs a broker, but I'll tell you, more people probably should use a broker than do, because that bill is so high and the reputation is touchy in the area, in the area of dental brokers. So here's how you know how to pick a good one: is you pick up the phone and you call the other people that deal with brokers day in and day out. Bankers at Bank of America provide Huntington would probably be where I would start. And then I would call the dental lawyers in your area And I would say, of these choices, I used Google. I realized my choices are A, B, and C. If you were selling your practice, would you choose A, B, or C? And the lawyer's going to hem and haw a little bit, as they always do. And you're going to pin them down and say, no, I really need you to pick A, B, or C. And they will. And they may just do it verbally over the phone and not in writing. And that's understandable. But you call the other people around that do dental transitions. And you find out who is the broker with a good reputation and who is the inevitable broker in every market who has a terrible reputation because they're out there.
I like that. But I also worry that it's like there's these kickbacks and these incentives and these relations. I don't trust dental relationships at all because I see these cliques of people and I know money. I know money.
There is just money that changes hands. Yep.
There is money. I'm going to be difficult. I like to be difficult. Keeps things interesting.
Yeah. So some other questions that I would ask is I would ask the broker how many listings they have active right now. What is their average time to close? Okay, they should have these stats. Mm-hmm. I would ask the broker, how many active searching buyers do you have like on an email list or some kind of contact list today? Okay, that's another question that would be good. I would ask them about their process. Please describe for me the process. And then I would ask them for some paperwork. And by the way, Grace, you joked about the seller who is like revamping their website just kind of for their ego. The average dental broker website out there is pretty terrible, right? So that's kind of an indication. If you can't get useful information off of a broker's website, that could tell you and give you a clue of what the average buyer's experience is going to be like.
Asking for referrals, like who are some people you've represented? Who are some people you've helped? That can go a long way as well.
I will say, Grace, just in the defense, it's hard for brokers to nail a kickback on like who's good. But you're right. There are referral relationships in the industry. So it is something to be aware of. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah. I just have seen some crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. I like all of what you had to say. I know it brings a ton of value. So if I'm a buyer and I'm closing on a practice, it's going to be hard for me to ask this question, not answer it, but how do I avoid patient attrition?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've seen your Facebook group and I love the advice that people are getting there. How do you avoid patient attrition? Okay. Well, the first thing to know is just take a deep breath and realize that, again, according to the Brian Hanks Dental Buyer Advocates informal study of several hundred now dental practices, but this isn't peer-reviewed data, that the average patient attrition in transitions that our team is involved in is actually a negative number, meaning there isn't actually net patient attrition, meaning that the average buyer that comes into the practice is young, energetic, excited to go work with Grace and get some actual marketing done, excited to revamp the website, excited to get the team going on Google reviews, et cetera, right? And so they will see net new patients relative to the seller, according to my data. Now, that's not always true. So let's talk about the situations you need to be a little bit more careful in. Maybe a specialist that's highly, dependent on referrals, and maybe a doctor that was doing a lot of specialty casework or, really focused on cosmetics, et cetera. And it was the face of the doctor that was the practice. So the number one thing to do is focus on great relationships with your staff. Okay. Make sure the staff is dialed in. They believe in you and they're saying nice things about you behind your back and on the phone. Number two is don't sweat the inevitable. I'm going to say it's usually between 6 and 10 patients that are very vocal that the seller left and that you're there. Remember, there is a patient base of hopefully 1,200 to 2,000 or somewhere around that number of active patients. And yeah, there's like 6 of them that are really loud that the old doctor left and they loved her and you're there and they're disappointed. But it's 6 of, 1,800 and the math works in your favor here. So just remember that that's going to happen. And then the third thing to do is focus on just making sure that the actual experience of that patient showing up to that dental practice is at least as good as, which is never hard to do, and hopefully a little bit better than the seller, so that the website looks nice and clean, the office got a fresh coat of paint, there's no confusion with billing, et cetera, right? So just make that client experience at least as good as the seller's, and you are golden for all but those 6 to 10 patients.
I agree completely. I don't even think it would hurt to observe the selling doctor and how they do things for a little bit. If you have that opportunity, it could be something as simple as they always spend the first 3 minutes just catching up and saying hello. And it could be a very subtle thing that they do that you could pick up on and maintain that goes a long way. And to add to this, I would also say, pick up the phone, call and introduce yourself to patients.
I love it.
Write your own story, your own narrative. I see so many transition letters that are just very weak, very weak. They're like, oh, Dr. So-and-so was so great. He built this amazing reputation and and it's so with a bittersweet experience that he's finally retiring. He's going to travel the world and And then there's like two sentences.
By the way,
by the way, the new doctor is so excited to meet you. And it's like, what? So we need to flip that. We need to make the letter more buyer focused and still honor the selling doctor. But it needs to be a strategic marketing letter, not an announcement.
So true. I think it's, I think it's on Dental Economics. If you go search, terrible letter to patients, my name will come up with an article that has little red arrows and pictures saying exactly what you just said, saying this isn't a Navy captain retiring and standing on the bridge of the deck of the ship with 1800 active patients saluting, saying, we love you, doctor. I mean, the vast majority of patients, they just want good dental care. They're sad to see you go and they're excited for the new person.
I mean, they're a part of that and they might have a personal connection with that doctor, but what is the goal of the letter? The goal is not to send off the doctor and the patients with the doctor. The goal is to retain. And so we have to flip the focus. Okay, my last question for you. How much do accountants see practices typically spend on marketing?
So it's always too low is the quick answer, okay? So it's kind of hilarious how many patients show up in dental offices with how little gets spent on marketing. But according to the numbers, and this is me and my team internally, this is how we kind of judge a practice. And I'll give it as a percentage of collections. Any, you know, the most common number we see is anywhere between 0 and 1% of collections spent on what the bookkeeper designates as advertising, which could be lots of different things, right? But $1 million practice, 1%. It is not a big number, less than 10 grand in most cases. Okay. Anything between 1% and 3%. And I immediately in my mind as an accountant, I think to myself, okay, someone is actually trying. Whether or not they're trying effectively, whether or not it's working, whether or not, you know, a buyer could do better is a totally separate set of questions. But 1% to 3% of collections. And I think to myself, all right, someone is actually paying attention to advertising in this practice. Anything above like 3, 4, 5+%. And I know that this practice is highly focused on growth. They're focused on new patients. And chances are, and this isn't a perfect correlation because people can induce waste a lot of money in advertising. But most often I see those practices are just rocking and rolling in all the different areas. That's not a perfect rule, but anything where a practice is spending 4, 5, 6% of collections on advertising, they're doing everything else well. They have procedures, they have employee handbooks, they have a, you know, QR codes at the front to get great Google reviews. Their office looks amazing. They have the latest and greatest equipment. So again, this is very, very distilled down to just a number on a tax return for me. But that number kind of sits up and tells me a story. And then we call people like you, Grace, and we say, hey, can you take a look at this advertising budget that they're spending and give us a quick assessment? Is it good? Thumbs up, thumbs down? Where could the buyer do better?
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, I spoke to someone today who's he's invested with two different marketing agencies. Neither could get him anything. And I'm like, uh-oh, here we go. So I'm like, so how much were you spending? How much were you putting in your ad spend? And he's like, well, they told me like I could get by with like $500. And I was like, he's in a super high competition market. I'm like, you're not even in the game. Yeah. You're like you're in the bleachers. You're not even up to bat. You're not even getting a shot here. And he was obviously uncomfortable with investing what he needed to invest to get what he needs to get. But you end up having these chicken and egg conversations a lot where, oh, I don't have the cash flow to put in. Well, then, okay. So it's tough.
The analogy that tends to work for the buyers at least is, hey, you know, how much would it be worth to you to have an assistant that sticks with you for 10 years that you're not constantly replacing? oh man, that would be amazing. They'd be great. They could be trained. They would know my habits and everything. Okay, great. Well, guess what? You're gonna have to pay them a little bit more. Okay. Yeah, I can do that. Right. And it's the same mentality of a little bit of investment will actually turn out better for you in the long run. The same is true of advertising. Again, if it's done well, you gotta.
If it's done well. Oh, yep. Of course. Well, I think you're a wealth of knowledge. Thank you for joining me. Where can our audience find you if they're interested in learning more about what you do or working with you?
I'll mention three resources. The website is dentalbuyeradvocates.com. So Dental Buyer Advocates. There is a book for sale on Amazon. Again, I'm an accountant, so forgive me the title, Grace. You're an advertising person, but the title of the book is How to Buy a Dental Practice.
I love it.
And then I do have a free podcast where there are no ads. There are it's just all value add. So if you're listening to this podcast, go search for Practice Purchased, and you can learn more about buying a dental practice. And sellers would be well served to listen to that too.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for being here with me today, Brian, and for all of the great information. For our listeners and viewers, follow our podcast, our Facebook group, Dentistry's Growing with Grace. And if you would like information on your marketing or to take advantage of a complimentary marketing planning session, you can visit identitydental.com, and we will see you next time.